because the game studios want you to specialize. Like the larger studios want you to specialize. They want lots of people who are really good at one thing.
Hello, welcome back to Press Start, How to Become a Game Developer. My name is Adam Ardisasmita, CEO of Arsenesia and the Vice President of Indonesia Game Association, or AGI. I'm going to be your host for today's episode. And as usual in Press Start, we will talk about the journey, how to become a game developer, what skills is needed, what kind of role is there in the game industry. And we will invite the game developer experts in this industry to share their journey. And we hope the story can inspire all of us and have a grasp about what is it to become a game developer. Okay, so stay tuned because Press Start is going to have a new episode every Monday. So make sure you put on your calendar to stay tuned every Monday. And of course, this podcast is brought to you by Goethe Institute Jakarta and Indonesia Game Association. All right. Without further ado, today we're going to have a special guest. Let's invite Saffron to the stage. Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Saffron. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm great. By the way, in what cities or countries are you in right now?
So I'm in Toronto. So Toronto, Canada.
Toronto, Canada. I think it's another 12-hour difference from Indonesia, right?
Yeah, it's about 10 a.m. right now.
All right. It's, I think, around 9 p.m. here.
Yeah. Totally different.
We are on the opposite of the world. All right. Before we start, would you mind introducing yourself to the audience? What are you doing right now in your daily activity as a game developer? And maybe you can share a little bit about the titles that you're working, if you can.
Sure. So I am a art director and a freelance artist in the games industry. I'm the art director at Mighty Yell and the creative director at my own studio, Kitten Cup Studio. And then every now and then I might work with some other studios as well for freelance. We just finished the big con over at, I guess it's been out for a little while now. But we had a new edition just come out, the Grift of the Year edition. And at Kitten Cup Studio, we are currently working on Pico, which is the RT making simulator for cats, which is coming out next year.
It's already on Steam, right?
The Big Con or Pico?
Both of them.
Yeah. I mean, one of them you can buy. One of them, you know, you can wish list since it's not
wish list. Awesome. Please, everyone, go check the Big Con. And what's the title for the
Pico? Second like one? The T, Pico.
Oh, Pico. Yeah. All right. So you can check it out. And so right now you have two separate jobs, right? You all do freelance and you have your own studio, right?
Well, I guess technically I work at two studios and I do freelance. So it's almost like three jobs.
More than two. Oh my God.
Which is a lot. But luckily, you know, I work at two very nice studios. So I work part-time at both, which, you know, equals, you know, one full-time job.
All right. Okay. Before we start, talking more about the role that you are working right now. Usually, we have a trivial question for our guests, but you don't have to worry. There is no right or wrong, no score or leaderboard. So it's just a simple question for you, okay? So the first question is, Saffron, do you remember what is the title of the game that you first played when you were a child, maybe?
That I first played?
Yes.
I think it was a game cartridge I found in the sandbox. And it was
in the sandbox. Yeah.
It was a Game Boy Advance cartridge. And it was the Legend of Zelda game. The one where it changes worlds. can't remember what it's called. I remember getting that, and then my friend had a Game Boy, and I think I played it on theirs, and I really wanted one. And it was really confusing because I didn't know. I was like an elementary schooler. I didn't know what Zelda was. I didn't know what anything was. I was just running around, and it was really confusing because it's non-linear. And I was like, I don't understand. Why do I keep going into this weird world? Because someone had already played a bit of it too. So I think that was the first game I played.
So you don't own a Game Boy back then?
I didn't, but it made me really, really want one. And then I begged my dad to get me a Game Boy Advance. And that was my favorite. It's like my favorite handheld console. I played it so much.
So Game Boy Advance is the first gaming console that you own?
Yeah, yeah.
I see. And I think I'm curious about how your child time with gaming. Most of the parents has a quite strong restriction against playing video games, right? Because it make you, I don't know, maybe lazy, stupid, something like that. But is it also happening to you back then with your family?
I mean, it made me a game developer, so careful. Careful, kids. You might play games and then make them. Well, my dad's a gamer. So, yeah, he likes games.
That's pretty easy for you, right?
And my aunt, so my second console, she had an N64. And, like, we would go to, we'd go to Blockbuster. And Blockbuster was still around. And then we would rent the cartridges, and we would play all those. Mm. And then Blockbuster went out of business while we had these. So we just have all of these old, like, Blockbuster, games in like the old, like, original, like, boxes and stuff. So yeah, so thankfully, I think because of that, there was those gamer influences. My mom is never a gamer. I don't think she really, she was fine with it though, as long as I didn't like play it too late. So, you know, I would do that thing where I'd be like under the covers and I would like for a nap, and then I'm playing and then like she would like open the door and I'd be like, she's like, I know you're playing. And I'm like, so,
all right.
Other than that, I feel.
I see. Well, you're so lucky because not a lot of parents have that play games or give permission for their children to play, even own a device to play a game, right? All right. Okay. So the first title that you play is Zelda on Game Boy Advance. Mm-hmm. Next, the second question. What is the last game that you play before this recording session?
Actually, no, I play Jurassic World.
Jurassic World?
Jurassic World Evolution. Because I'm a big, I love like management games. And like inventory management and resource management. And it's just like something about that like organization that I really like. So I played Zoo Tycoon and Roller Coaster Tycoon growing up. And then I got Planet Zoo, which is also fantastic, which is like the spiritual sort of successor to Zoo Tycoon. And then this game, I think I have it like two versions of it. I know I got one for free from like Epic. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So it's just,
all right. Yeah.
You know, and it's been on my computer for the longest time. I wanted to be like an archaeologist as a kid, so I love dinosaurs. And it's done by the same developers who did Planet Zoo. So I was like, okay. Let's try it out. And I think for the longest time I didn't play it because I don't know, on Jurassic World, I think I hadn't really watched the movies or anything. So, but it's good. And then oops, I ended up spending like a whole day playing it on the weekend.
I see. Is it your favorite genre? Like game about management, like Tycoon, or you have any kind of other genre that you like to play?
I really like crafting games. I love exploring and crafting and building. So Like, I like a lot of survival management games. So, like, Ark is also another.
Ark.
You know, I love building that one. And I like collecting and having pets. Rune Factory 4 is a really good one as well, which I'm constantly playing. Harvest Moon, Stardew Valley, anything where I can, like, yeah, inventory manage and craft and build and grow. It's fun.
I see. Yeah. These are great titles. All right. Okay. So the last game that you play, Jurassic World, and you like to play games with genre of like crafting, exploring the world, and also management, something like that, right? So, okay. The next question is, besides playing video games, what is your other hobbies or entertainment that you like to do?
Surprise, I also like just crafting things with real materials.
Okay, nice.
I feel like my interests definitely sort of cross over. Yeah, I like building physical things too. I do cosplay when I can. I like sewing. I like using foam and wood and building and sort of making things, if that's considered. I like trying out a lot of new things. So, you know, when I look at the screen too much and then I've made things, I like seeing something physical. So I'm not very good at sports. So as much as I try, I'm not good at it.
All right. Okay. What kind of thing that you already create in real life? I mean, do you create, I don't know, clothes, a statue, or a toys?
I like miniatures and like small sculptures. I got a new sewing machine recently and a bunch of patterns.
Oh. Wow. That is serious.
Yeah. I'm not very good at sewing though. I'm, you know, I guess that's why it's a hobby, because I'm not good enough to do it professionally. Taking care of plants too, I guess. Yeah, I like plants.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. So for the last question, I think you already also mentioned that when you were a kid, you want to be an archaeologist. Is there any other dream job that you aiming as children as a kid before?
I don't know. I'm kind of living the dream job. I always, as long as I could like make something, that was really, I think, what I wanted. I know my mom always had like big, you know, lofty dreams, right? Like lawyer or president or something like that. But I don't know. or like, you know, actor or something like that. But I'm not, you know. So I don't know. I like working with studios, and I like working in a team, and I like being part of something. So I think TV as well. TV and movies was one of the paths that I had like thought about. And I love watching like how it's made, like the documentaries. I know Disney has like a lot of the behind the scenes, and I'm like, that looks so fun. Yep. I love hearing them talk about each other and like the process that they took to like design things and how much they like care about things. So that's always fun.
Yes, and they're very passionate about their work, right? And so inspiring.
Yeah, I love that.
All right. Okay, thank you so much for the trivial question. I think this is going to help all of the listeners to understand more about you personally, like the game that you play, the thing that you do. So in this podcast, we would like to talk about your journey in the video game industry, hopefully, because most of our audience, maybe some of it is also game developers, but most of it is enthusiasts, students, fresh graduate. They might want to know how to jump into the industry, how to start their career if they want to work in the game industry. So for the starter of this session, the question that I want to ask is, when was the time that you decided you want to work in the game industry, and what was the trigger back then?
Originally, I'm an artist. I went to art school in for high school. And I did illustration. So I would do posters. And then that sort of led me to, I think, wanting to do comics. I really wanted to do comics and like illustrations and stuff like that. And I did. I have some published comics here in Toronto, the Toronto Comics Anthology. I really loved doing that. And I'd like, again, working, with stories as well. So, comics take a really long time. I mean, so do games. So two things that take a lot of time and, to sort of see to completion. I went to high school and I did that. And then I went to university. I went to OCAD, and at OCAD, there was this new program, mm-hmm. right when I was graduating, called Digital Futures. And it was the first year for its undergrad, because I think it already had a graduate program. That was the first version. So this is the sort of first mm-hmm. year for our cohort. And luckily I got accepted. I think I applied to like two schools and OCAD accepted me, thankfully. So the program was supposed to be about, originally had a really long acronym. So the original acronym mm-hmm. was, Digital Futures Technology Innovation, Design Art, I think, DFTDA.
Wow. Wow, that's a long name.
but it's supposed to be, sort of training us to be like these X-shaped designers, people who were entrepreneurs who sort of are studied in practical and in theory. So, trying to, teach people to be like the more like directors and stuff like mm. that. And in some ways it was, good in that way. But there was also, I think, we wanted some of that practicality. So there was some there in the end, I'm really happy that I went, but I remember there were frustrations that people had because they, we weren't making certain things or the portfolio that we wanted. But because of that, it had sort of opened up sort of all these pathways and sort of exposed us. Like that was the whole point of the program, luckily. Mm-hmm. So we would do like excursions to all these different like potential workplaces. Mm-hmm. We looked into like healthcare and wearable technology and video games and opera.
Okay. Wow, that's so diverse. All right.
It's a lot of different things. And interactive media and art. So a lot of stuff we were exposed to. And then I think that sort of narrowed itself down. We did a game focused sort of atelier program. We did lots of rapid prototyping, which is really good sort of world experience because especially if you're in a small studio, you want to do that rapid prototyping. So we got used to a lot of like these real world sort of experiences and that led to us sort of like talking with studios and the people and networking in the industry in Toronto. And then that eventually led to graduation and then mm-hmm. work. So it was very much, like a journey kind of like this. Like I wasn't sure where it was necessarily going to go. But that's okay. And I'm happy where it led. I'm grateful for all of the different experiences that I had. And it definitely all like informs each other as well, I think.
I see. When you were graduating and you're applying for works, is it the first in mind that I want to work in the game company and I will apply to every game company's available, or you also apply in other kind of industry?
Yeah. So I think there was a bit of, like at the beginning, so we did like internships and stuff. And we did some, again, like interactive art, like installation stuff, And then we did a little, I don't think I did intern at like a game, a proper like game studio. I worked with, with like a cross media. No, I did make a game, but a lot of it was very, it wasn't all like pure game stuff. A lot of it was like cross media. I worked at one studio that made, that did a lot of cross media with like TV shows. So like we made a game that was based off of like a web show or something like that. So it was never like purely games. And it, like, again, and this is when I think of like some of the other schools, because again, OCAD was a university and it was very like theory and sort of thinking about design a lot more. Whereas with some other universities or colleges, they'll have you do a lot more just like practice, like churning out that portfolio, you know, getting, getting you just working constantly on just portfolio work, which is not a bad thing. But they're two very different things. And one is, one is a lot easier to apply to a game studio, a large, like a large game studio with, because the game studios want you to specialize, like the larger studios want you to specialize. They want lots of people who are really good at one thing instead of one person who can do sort of a few things. So I got rejected a lot. It's sort of where I'm coming to here. I definitely, I was much more successful in smaller companies and working collaboratively with smaller teams because I was more X-shaped, or actually more accurately T-shaped, which I can talk a little bit about, which is, you know, better for covering, you know, larger areas of work that need to be done.
I see, I see. And after you graduate, what is the role or the company that you work in for the first company?
So the first one was a startup. It was called Impossible Things, and I was the, it was a really small team, and I was, I think I was like the lead production person, I think is like the title on my LinkedIn. Essentially what that means is I did a bunch of things, you know. I would concept things, I would make the assets, I would put them in the builds, I would animate them. The only thing I didn't do was any sort of programming or like technical stuff, because I'm not a strong programmer, as much as I have tried to be, you know, a jack of all trades. we had an exhibition at the AGO, which is the Art Gallery of Ontario here.
I see.
And it was essentially this app where you can hold up your phone. It was augmented reality. You could hold up your phone to like a painting, and then on your phone the painting would come to life, because we had sort of taken it and put it into Unity and done all of that. So that was my first, I think, real job out of university.
Is it a game company or like a general interactive media company?
Yeah, more general, like interactive media, working with lots of like other forms of entertainment and stuff.
I see. So so in this experience, you didn't get a chance to work as a game developer, right? Mostly creating apps, or you make games too?
I think like when I was leaving, they were working towards building a game, but it was mostly apps. I think it's mostly, I think, about what kind of jobs and clients, right?
Yep.
So I think when I left, they were working on another app as well that I was there for a little bit at the beginning. As far as I know, I think just apps. Yeah.
I see. All right. But the thing that you learn over there will also like give you experience. Is it useful as a game artist or illustrator in the future?
It's definitely useful. I worked So we use Unity, and we worked a lot in that. Everything else, so we you know, I use Photoshop as well, and there was a lot of that sort of working to, because we had to take the paintings, the scans from the paintings, and then either cut them out and sort of animate them, or turn them into like 3D models. There's a lot of good experience sort of just working with 2D and 3D assets, which is it's definitely helpful. It's definitely transferable. And Unity is just so big as well. So
yep.
Yeah.
Was it your first time have experience with game engine like Unity, or you already learned about Unity in your university or school before?
So in at Digital Futures, there was this program. So there's a game design program, and I took it twice. I think I took the same.
Oh, really?
The same, yeah. Because you, I think I did it in what, second year and third year, I think. And it's a really great program. Fantastic professors. Shout out to all of them over there.
Shout out.
And there's a competition, a student competition here in Toronto as well, called Level Up, where all of the universities and colleges, you know, who are doing game programs sort of participate in. And it's really great. So I've made two games for that. So you spend the year where you get a team and you do that like long format, make instead of the rapid prototyping we did in like the first and second year. So you have this long format game, and you also do game jams as well at the beginning of the year until you get your team. And then you come up with the idea, you make the game, you submit it to the competition. Everyone, you know, people, it's open to everyone, you know, so anyone can come and play the games. And then they judge the games, and they award prizes. So yeah, there've been a lot of good like publicity, for that and for networking with other people. And if you're looking for like a job as well, you can sort of scope out either people who you want to hire or people, or people you want to work for. Actually, one of our programmer at Kitten Cup, we met.
From that?
Yeah. He was working with another, he made a different game, and he was recommended to us, and then we reached out to him, and you know, 4 years later, here we are.
4 years later. Interesting. I think that's really important to be connected with each other, right? Nice. All right. So, after you work on your first company, after that, did you landed into game companies or still interactive media companies or another industry?
Yeah. So what happened was I worked at Impossible Things for a while. And then so there's another indie studio in Toronto called Drinkbox. And they made Guacamelee.
I know that game, right?
So they were looking for a 2D environment artist, and they had reached out to me and, you know, asked if I was available. And I said, I would love to work with you guys. So that's what I did. And I sort of, I worked there for a contract, and I worked on Guacamelee too. And that was really fun. And they're all really nice people.
That's really interesting. How they found you? I mean, they contacted you, right? So how did how can you get into their radar? I mean, like, hey, this is a 2D environment artist.
Yeah. And excellent question. How did they find you? actually, I think it was because I was friends with another game developer. I don't remember if at this point I was working at the same time, but there was another contract for another game, with Super Crush KO by Vertex Pop, which is another game that I did sort of freelance work for. And I'd worked with the devs there. And they had, I think, just I think recommended me. So it helps, you know, to have friends in the industry, and to get to know people. And I think, yeah, I'm quite fortunate that sort of my friends liked my work and they recommended me. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's how the industry work, right? If you manage, have a good network, be nice with everyone, then someone will recommend or give referral to you, right?
Yeah. So my one big piece of advice is, you know, in the industry, don't look to network with people, look to make friends with people, you know. People can tell when you want something from them, you know. So just approach people like you would any other person, I think. And if it goes well, then it goes well. And I think that's the best way to approach that.
Wow. Wow, that's really interesting. Be genuine, right? Because usually networking the image is I want something from you, something like that, right?
Yeah, I want a job, or you know, I want you to promote me or something. Yeah, it's be genuine, make friends, make games, make friends.
I see. When you first join, coming into the community, the industry, as far as someone who haven't built a game before or never worked in the game industry, how did you blend in? Do you have some kind of preparing some portfolio or learning about the industry, or you can just easily jump into the community and make friends?
I think that's because I went to university for it. They did, there was some level of teaching, right? Of development, I think. So mm-hmm. I think because of that, and then it was also okay, you know, go do game jams. I did a lot of outside of we weren't forced to go do game jams. You know, there's mm-hmm. the Global Game Jam and then there's Toe Jam here in Toronto. And those are good, just experience, and they're fun to do. And again, you make lots of friends and you meet new people and you make a game and you're like, wow, look at this thing we made over a weekend. So in terms of joining the, or is this a how to break into the industry question? I think, because I don't know, it's YouTube and the internet. I feel like it's much easier now to quote unquote break into the industry. There are all these curated spaces. There are Discords, right? There are, you know, which I feel like is, I don't know how many people still use classic forums these days. I know there's Reddit or whatever.
Reddit, yeah.
I feel like Discord is really what has sort of taken over now. People probably stream game dev, so you can watch in real time how people do things, and you can learn from that and ask questions. And if you're curious about things, all you have to do is reach out to somebody. I feel like it's much more accessible these days. And, you know, if there's something that you want to do, if you're curious about it, or if you want to learn it, start with a question, start with that desire, and then just see where it takes, you know. How do I make this? Just Google that, YouTube it, or ask a friend, and then you work back from there.
Yes, yes, true, true. And I think that you mentioned about Game Jam, I think it's going to be a very perfect place for anybody, right? Because in Game Jam, usually you can join a Game Jam without any background in the game dev, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So look for another Game Jam around you. And I think, I don't know, when you did a game jam, it's before pandemic, right? Where you can meet up people face to face and make friends. And do you think it is possible to have that same kind of energy and chemistry doing it online?
Yeah, there was just a game jam this weekend, actually. I didn't participate in it because I already have so much work and so many games. It sounds like, and also even before in the before times, you could do like Global Game Jam and Toe Jam. You could do it from home. You could do it online. You don't have to do it in person. Although it is fun, you know, going there and sleeping on the floor, maybe. I think it's still worth it. I mean, I work remotely. With both of my studios. So it's actually been a while since I have worked. Like, I worked with Drinkbox, you know, in a real studio. Mm-hmm. And I think that was my last time I sort of worked physically in a studio with other people. So I definitely think, virtual sort of game jamming is, You can still I think get some of that. I guess you don't meet as many people, but I think it's still good.
I see. So for you who listen or watch this podcast, just try to find a game jam. I think this is a good start for you to make friends, not a connection or network. Make friends, right? Like friends in the game industry. Maybe you can. They can share insight, knowledge, and just having fun. All right. So let's get back to your story. When you work as a 2D environment artist for Guacamole, right? Do you have any experience before doing environment assets, 2D environment?
Mm. So, yeah, going back to Impossible Things and sort of the experience that I had, because I had... I had that experience working in Unity and working with those 2D and 3D assets. And also I had done Level Up. There was some experience, student experience, but still experience on my resume.
Yeah.
I think that helped. And also I think I had I was very active on Twitter. So I would make things in my free time or the projects that I did, and I would post that on Twitter. So, and I have a portfolio, but they would see that I'm doing things. And I think that also, even though I hadn't previously worked at a game studio, and, there is that acknowledgement that I was a fresh grad, fresh out of school. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that also nice advice, insight for everyone to put your works out there, like put it on Twitter, put it in everything, so you can get spotlight, right? Someone can see you, and someone can ask you to join their project or something like that. But regarding the skills, Saffron. I mean, before you create a 2D or 3D asset, something like that, when you're working in the gaming industry, creating video games, is that a challenge for you to adapt? This is new things, something that I never done before? Or this is the thing that I already learned in the university and I already did that in my previous company and easy to do?
It depends. I think it really depends on sort of the project and the team and the pipeline. Some are much, easier than others. There's definitely a lot that I have learned, just from working, over the years, that I had never done before, that I had maybe an idea to do, or I had to sort of learn how to do. And then, there's always that sort of trial and error, and as you work on it and as you sort of go along, you become more efficient at things. You realize, why am I doing it this way? This is much better to do. I think feel like one of the things that maybe I've always struggled with, or that I probably find the hardest, maybe is realism. Realism's hard to do well, I think. And I like stylized stuff. I like low poly stuff. I like stuff that's a little bit more, like stylistic, I guess. So when it comes to, as much as I like seeing how people make realistic stuff, it's it's very technical. And especially like when I think of probably, like the AAA and sort of those pipelines, it is very different. And very specific, and you have to do things to an industry standard and making sure that it is done their way. So we weren't really taught, I think, I know a little bit of some of these pipelines, of doing the high poly sculpt and then you retopologize it and you make it low poly and then you take them and you put them together and so that it looks high poly, but it's low poly. And you have to have both like the artistic skill, but also the technical skill.
Technical, yeah.
And I remember working in Unreal for like a,
all right.
like a competition back again in university. And no one had taught me how to use Unreal.
All right.
And I only knew the very like basics of what I knew from Unity. I was like, it won't be that bad. Maybe it'll just transfer over. Like kind of, that sort of student mentality of like, I can do it. and I did do it. And I did it in a very short amount of time. Was it the best? Did it win? Did it get me the job? No, but I can probably go back into Unreal now and be like, all right, I kind of get this.
Yeah, that's a great lesson learned. Yeah. I mean, the mentality of that, I can do this, just try it. I think that's a good mindset, right? Because a lot of people decide to not doing things, trying things just because they think they cannot do it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really grateful, especially that I did that a lot back then. I don't know if it's like muscle memory now or something, but like I do feel like when I go back into my first program was Blender. I still use Blender. I love Blender. Very good. Free program. Highly recommend. And I hated it. I'm kidding. And they tried to teach us, they taught us how to use Maya, which is again, industry standard program.
Right.
And us students, we could use it for free. Once I was no longer a student, could no longer use it unless I wanted to buy it. And then there's also 3ds Max, I think. So there's these three programs and they're all very wildly different, three programs to 3D model. And yet they were so difficult. And I remember like trying to be taught how to use Maya and then trying to use Blender, and I think at one point I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. Goodbye. I'm breaking up with you, Maya. And I just went full Blender. But now that I've used these programs for a really long time, Blender and Unity, a game engine and a 3D modeling program and Photoshop as well. Mm-hmm. So, an image manipulation program, there is a certain level now, I think, of experience that you gain from that, just from using it for so long, that, for example, when I use Clip Studio Paint now to sort of do a lot of illustrations and drawing, I'm like, oh, there was this thing in Photoshop. I wonder if Clip Studio has it. And sure enough, like it probably does, or maybe it's in like a different place. So you do kind of like bridge the gap, I think, a little bit easier. Same thing with Blender. Like I remember struggling with it, but I remember like looking for it. And then later on, I YouTube tutorials, and tutorials are fantastic. Tutorials and tips, just spending that time, like a make a crate tutorial, actually making something, you see like, oh, what's that hotkey? Then you go to Google what the hotkey is. I learned a lot from just like trying to figure out how to make things instead of, I think, a standard like, and this is where all this is, and this is where this is, yeah, and that kind of stuff. So highly recommend learning, you know, by doing, trial by fire and all that.
But I think it's interesting to see how you build your skill set. I mean, you're a 2D artist, also a 3D artist. You can do models, you can illustrate and everything. I mean, is it like intentional that you want to be able to do everything? Or how did you plan? I mean, like, most of the games that you create is in 2D, right? Like the Guacamelee and then the, what you mentioned, the Beacon, it's in 2D. Why you need to build your skill set on into 3D too? Or is it hobby, something that you like to do on your free time?
So it's like a little bit of everything. I have this very intense desire to give form to ideas, no matter what. So, you know, that transfers to my hobbies as well. I bought a bunch of like leather working tools because I wanted to make a belt. You know, it's just like thinking of that idea and I really want to know how to make it. And then I try to learn how to make it. So 2D and 3D, you know, 2D was the beginning because, you know, when I was a kid, I would draw and you'd have your markers and I watch anime. So then I'm like, I want to draw the anime. I want to draw the cartoons and the comics. And you start there and then you sort of see those sort of next steps. And 3D, I think, was part of that next step. You know, I would have like an idea for like a diorama. And I'm like, I really want to make that. So then I'm like, okay, I got to learn this thing to make that. All right. I want to interact with it. I got to learn this other thing to make that. And it's quite empowering. I like having that sort of ability to just make things. So yeah, I think that's sort of where it stems from. It is difficult though, sort of this specializing versus, because I get so interested in so many things, but I only have a limited amount of time. you know, it's hard to be, I think, really to sort of work on these skills because there's so many things you want to do. But it's still fun. And I think that's what's important. that's what I think of when I think about careers and people doing careers or changing things. You don't have to do the one thing. You can do many things. You can change the thing you want to do. If you want to make 3D games, or if you decide, okay, I want to be an animator now, try animation. I think it's about how you feel. So, yeah.
This is really interesting because a lot of advice out there is like, you need to specialize on one thing and you need to be able to master that, because like you mentioned earlier, right, a big studio is looking for a very, very specialized person and skill set, right? Mm. But what you do is like totally the opposite, right? You try everything, you learn everything. And I think that also will help you in the future, right? Like having the experience on different kind of world. Maybe you can understand more about the pipeline, having more empathy regarding the different kind of role. And I think that's great.
Mm. Yeah. Well, what I think what it comes down to for that is what you want, right? What the individual wants. And I kind of break it down into, I gave a GDC talk this year, which was my first. Unfortunately, it was virtual. Nice. I really wanted to go in person, but then at the last minute, I had to cancel my flight.
Oh, and, too bad.
I really wanted to go. I miss it. Maybe next year.
Next year. Let's do it next year.
I give a little talk about the difference between a creative director, an art director, and an artist, especially because I found myself in the position of all three.
All of them.
Yes. Yeah. You don't need to do. But like, again, it comes to your intent and what you want. So, you know, you could just be an artist and really focused on mm-hmm. that one thing. And that one thing is what gives you joy. You know, an animator, you know, could really, you know, love, you know, and they understand the movement. And there's this sort of balance, right? I think that they talk about of like what you love and what you're good at. And if you're able to make a job of that, then you're in a good position, I think, to an extent. Some people might say no, because, you know.
Why? Why would someone say no to that?
because I think, like, some people, I've heard, like, animators who say that, like, because they work in animation, they can't enjoy watching animated movies anymore.
I see.
You know, because they're constantly thinking about, like, how they did something or how long something took or something like that. I think the case like can be the same with maybe game developers as well. I don't find that. I constantly get inspired by the games I play.
Yep.
But I think, you know, just be prepared for that. You might, I guess, you know what? I there was this point where because I was drawing and making games, I was doing so much like interactive stuff and like 3D modeling. I'd originally done it like for fun in my free time, and now that I was doing it as a job, I wanted to do something else maybe in my free time. So I guess like just be prepared if that's what you want. But yeah, so if you're, you know, a singular, you know, if you're an artist and you want to make those things, and go ahead and do that. If you want to create larger stories or studios or these larger things, maybe you're more of an art director or creative director. Really, the only I think main difference for art directors and creative directors is sort of that level of where you are talking with people and that skill level that you have. If you have that sort of, you know, artistic and design knowledge and are able to make those decisions, I think is maybe the main difference. So you can be any of these things in game development. It's just what you want to do.
Right, that's really nice. So yeah, try to, maybe at first you need to try everything to be able to find something that you like. Maybe you need to explore some areas, and the journey, like you mentioned, at first that you try everything until you find something that you love. I think this is something that the process that everyone needs to do, right?
Mm-hmm. I also think that when you do these, let's say you work technically for a while and then you decide, you know, I want to make a game. I don't want to just make the assets for games. I want to make a game. I want to be the, you know, I have an idea and I want it created. Because you did those other things, you are able to communicate more clearly. You understand a little, because when you're working with a team, when you're leading a team, you have to sort of have a certain level of knowledge of like, and understanding, you know, how long are things going to take? You know, how much are things going to cost? Are you the producer, or do you have a producer? Do you have someone who understands the sort of the business side of all of these things? You know, that's why we have other people to fill in, you know, to make up for what we lack. Not to say that you can't also have this knowledge, but, you know, it just makes it so much easier to communicate and work with other people.
True. Is that the reason why you decide to create your own game, Pekoi?
Partially. Also, no one. I couldn't work at the game studio that I wanted to, so I just made my own. it just sort of happened. It developed somewhat naturally. We worked on Pico in our free time for like a while. You know, I knew I wanted to make this idea, and as an artist, I was just making things, but none of it really connected to anything. They were all mock-ups. It was all just visual development, and I was trying to sell people on the idea, and I thought, okay, well, what if I started sort of working with other people? What if we made a prototype? What if we started shopping the prototype around? And then we applied to the Ubisoft Indie Series, And and we won the special, the National Bank special prize from that, which...
Oh, that's nice.
Very thankful for that. You know, if it weren't for that, I don't know. We would have had to keep like pitching the game, which is what you do. You have a prototype, you keep pitching and you keep hoping until someone gives you money, or you keep making it for free in your own time with your other jobs. But thankfully, because of that money, we are able to... we have Ontario Creates here in it's a grant system, and we were able to apply with the money we were given. So we were able to match that money to work on a larger prototype. We incorporated the studio because you need to be an actual business to apply for this grant, and to sell the game as well, to put it on Steam. You need to be in a corporation. We did all of that. No one taught me in school how to do it. So it was a lot of very much trying to figure out. But thankfully, you know, I had my friends, I had my network. I asked people who had done this before, you know, what am I doing? What do I do? Yep. How do you do this? Is this normal? I asked like so many questions. I'm very thankful to all the devs and friends that had helped me along the way. Just ask so many questions. Ask all of the questions. You don't know how to do something, and then hopefully you just do them and you learn.
That is really amazing. The Ubisoft program, is it like open for everyone to join in, or there's like some? It's only for in Toronto area or something like that?
I think it's only open to the province that the studio is in. So there, I know that there's several studios. I know that Ubisoft Toronto does the indie series. They also have a student competition, the next student competition. So, which I had applied to for a few years. I think there's the studio in Montreal as well. And I think, you know, I don't know if the other studios, I know they have other studios do it. They might. I don't know also if other studios have similar initiatives, mostly because I haven't really heard of it or looked necessarily. But it's worth checking out, I think. I do know that you can apply, you know, to a AAA studio just as is. But I guess like in terms of... I know that like what the animation studios like Disney and such and Pixar, they have like portfolio reviews and such. You know, maybe other game studios, I don't know if like Blizzard or Ubisoft or whoever, you know, also does those things. But if that's a place you want to work, it's worth sort of, it's never too early to just like reach out and let them know who you are and, you know. Worst case scenario is they just don't reply to you, you know. Yes. You know, the best thing to do is to reach out and chat with people, even if you don't think you're necessarily ready. You know, I know people who you know won't do anything because they don't think that their portfolio is at like a level yet. But you know, and I've reviewed like plenty of portfolios as well, and It's always worth it, you know. If you can get feedback from people, experience, and it doesn't hurt. So
I see. I think the program that you mentioned, like Ubisoft or big studios trying to help the ecosystem, like the smaller indie company, I think that's really great, right? And you also mentioned there's some initiative like portfolio review, something like that, that really helps like aligning the students or the fresh grad or the one who doesn't know anything about the game industry to be more, I don't know, maybe more focused, aligned or something like that. I think that's great. That's something that we don't have in Indonesia because we don't have any AAA company in our country right now. And it's great to have that in your ecosystem. And you also mentioned about the funding. Is it from the government?
Yeah, so there is the Ontario Creates. It's an initiative or yes, it's like a government grant funding system, where you can pitch your ideas. They've like several different ones. Ours is the Interactive Digital Media, the IDM fund, and you can pitch your ideas there. And they'll match half of your funding. Essentially, you need to have a certain amount. You need to have a certain amount already, like in cash. But then they will, sort of match the rest, of your budget.
I see.
It's really, really helpful. Thankfully, because of that, I think a lot of Toronto's, game studios and indie, we have a good, I think, indie dev community. It's pretty well supportive, it's supported. But even then, I think. I guess like when I think of the big ones, like the States also, I guess like California, when you think of like entertainment and industry, California and San Francisco are also these big sort of like tech hubs. But it's not just like big companies and big studios. I think it's great that there are and government as well and government funding. Toronto has lots of like not-for-profits. We have Hand Eye Society here as well, and sort of, community-led game and entertainment spaces. We have TCAF here, which is not necessarily a community sort of led grassroots thing, because it's very large international comics convention. But I think if you don't have a community, you can always build one, right? And try to get, if you're whatever it is you're lacking, funding or something, there are ways to get it. It's not always easy, for sure.
yes, absolutely.
But I always find that I love communities and teams. So if you find that you're not finding what you're looking for, then try and make what you're looking for, try and find those like-minded people and build that thing.
I see. All right. It's so nice talking to you, and we already passed our time. It's more than 1 hour already.
Sorry.
It's so nice to talk to you. That's okay. I think there's a lot of interesting things that we can discuss. So I think for the last questions, for every new game developer, fresh graduate, or anyone who wants to try to start their career in the game industry, do you have any advice for them?
Any advice? Yeah, I don't know. Make friends, make games. That's the advice. Just do it. And don't, I feel like the biggest blocker is perfectionism. People get so in their head that something isn't good enough, or that they're going to fail. It's okay to fail. In fact, I think it's quite important that you fail. Failure is extremely valuable, and rejection, they're all part of growth, and you shouldn't do your best, hope for the best always. But don't let it stop you from doing something.
agree. I think that's really great advice. So remember, everybody, make friends, make games, and do not afraid to fail. This is something that we need to do as a process to learn. All right, thank you very much, Safran. It's really nice having you here. Thank you so much for giving all of the insight, all of the experience that you have. I hope this session can give inspiration and courage for everyone who listening and watching this episode to press starting their career as a game developers. All right, so I think that is for today. Thank you so much. Lastly, keep playing games, start making games. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Safran.
Bye-bye. Bye.